Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Discover the Copiah Advantage. Copiah County is a Mid-South gem with a spirit of opportunity, a business-friendly environment, and access to major transportation networks. Copiah County, let's do business. Visit CopiahWorks.com today and discover the Copiah Advantage.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Well, well, well. It's been quite a week, gardeners. Depending on where you live, you may be listening to chainsaws this morning and watching pickup trucks trying to pick up everything that has gotten knocked over. You know, we're in the midst of quite a challenge in terms of our trees, our storms, our weather, and it ain't over yet. Welcome to the Garden Mama Show, where we talk about all the things that are going on in our, really, in our green world everywhere. I'm happy to tell you that my particular spot in this little universe is fine. We had a little bit of this and that, but nothing compared to what many of you endured the other day, other evening, rather. And frankly, driving in today, I came a route that I don't usually go, and there's more damage than I even knew about since the other evening. Now, for those of you who don't really care because you don't live where we live, I know that there are many areas of our state that have been smacked in one or another of these tornadic events that have blown through. The reason I'm talking about it is because it does affect our gardens, and it's not over yet. Good morning, Lance.
Good morning. It is
not to be negative, just to be realistic.
Yeah, I'm going with positive here. It's Eat What You Want Day and National Nutty Fudge Day.
Yes, it is. Those are two very good combinations.
The other one is the Twilight Zone Day.
Yeah, today. So if you really didn't want to do anything, you could just binge television.
There's got to be an episode in Twilight Zone about recurring storms.
I mean,
because
so.
It wasn't 2-3 weeks ago. And
here we go again.
Or a month ago, we had a bunch of trees down. Then you have it again.
I got up this morning and looked at the weather and decided I didn't really want to look at the weather.
Yeah, well, I think we're going to, from the radar that I was looking at on Friday, it looked like, and not necessarily radar, but the outlook was probably some more rain early in the week,
yes.
But a pretty weekend.
Oh, yes. Once again, we'll have a beautiful weekend,
nice.
I think.
Peace after the storm, and hopefully a wonderful Mother's Day ensuing for everybody out there that's
I trust so.
Going to be celebrating their mothers or their sisters, who you know, all the whoever they are. But it's a wonderful day to celebrate the most important person and people in your life. So
it's,
I always keep them on their good side.
Keep them on your good side. That's
flowers
true.
Are good.
And all of us mothers say thank you repetitively and many times. This is certainly the biggest of the holidays for going out for brunch and such things, you know.
The brunch a day.
The brunch a day thing. So,
there's one place that was doing the walk-up omelet bar.
All right.
Type thing.
All right. I can see that.
It's a, you know, you walk up and tell them whatever you want.
Sure. Sure.
Bringing in the heat for the Mother's Day. That sounds like that'd be pretty good.
I like that. I like that.
Unlimited omelets. Can't go wrong with that. Just have to have some croissants to go with it.
My kids called me last night and asked if I was going to the Makers Fest in Jackson because they know what a fan I am of Mr. Ingram, the kingfish there, who's performing tonight. And I said, you know, I don't know if you were here, maybe you could take me. But I said that was too guilty of a mother thing to say. They're not even in this state right now.
Well, you can play them now.
So anyway, that's
you
it's
can play them
well. That's you have to just a little bit, just that you have to be reminded that you know there's a reason why. There's so many jokes about moms and mothers and all those things. And most jokes have at least a carrot of wisdom in them and reality as well. We're getting some good ones already today, some questions on our text line, which we truly hope you will burn up today, as well as the phone lines, of course, because that makes this a lot more fun of a broadcast. This is an interesting question from Greg in Madison, I think. The Sweet Bay Magnolia, this is such a fascinating tree. This is a tree that is determined to survive, by the way. The deer ate it, or at least seriously damaged it a few years ago. And one of the three main shoots has some dead at the top. I can see that. It does need to come on out because otherwise everything gets stuck. The energy from the plumbing system of the tree basically just tries to support that little nothing at the top that's not there anymore. And that, therefore, we cut those things down to give the rest of the plant its energy. The other picture of new shoots coming up from the bottom, I would leave them to grow because you may end up letting them replace the entire tree before it's all said and done. We just don't know yet. Damage to trees is sometimes recoverable and sometimes not. It's been a couple of winters already. I would say a rough summer, and this whole thing may be dependent on those lower shoots to keep going. And that's not a bad thing. It's a fairly fast-growing tree. Bay magnolias, sweet bay magnolias are so pretty. And they smell lemony to me. Do they smell lemony to anybody else? I think maybe. I don't know. You're looking at my onion flowers. You're working on supertalk.tv today. Thank you very much for putting up my photos.
They're beautiful.
First squash. I grew a squash.
It can't happen.
Now, it is cut up on the cutting board with the tomatoes that I ate it with, but still, it's right there. I decided I would leave that little bit of joy because today is, in fact, Eat What You Like Day. And first nasturtium bloomed. Things that come from seed are always such a great joy to me. I recognize it's a simple pleasure. And also, I have a photo today of the seed heads from some of my onions that are not there. These are not, I'm not necessarily going to let them all go to seed because there's way too many of them. But both your beautiful onions that form a seed head and make lots of little seedlings in them will do that, but also the ones out in the lawn. And Larry the Lizard makes his first appearance of the year. This one has, they're all named Larry at my house. This one has his entire tail. He has not been captured yet.
He has to be named Larry because the cat.
Yeah.
You got to just hope it's the same one.
It might be. I have one that has been truly mutilated by the cat and has survived, and so he has a little special place in the corner by the potting bench where the cat doesn't know he's there.
He's the cat's pet at this point.
At this point, he's my salvage. I'm trying to keep him from coming apart. But that's some fun stuff, though. I have to say that when you do have the opportunity to grow squash, please don't let it get as big as your arm before you pick it, unless it's intended to be a huge hard shell squash. You'll find you like the taste better, and you may even be able to persuade the folks in your family that think they don't like squash. I used to think I didn't like squash. That was because my grandmother cooked it unto death. Y'all have all seen that brown pile that's supposed to be squash. Well, I didn't know there was anything else for years. You have to get out and see things, experience different stuff. Oh, that's so sweet. Trey is quoting Gertrude Jekyll today. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Growing, changing. This is not that one. This is another one. Growing, changing, a little wild and crazy. That is Trey and the description of us. I thought about you, Trey, when the storms were coming through this week. I definitely wondered how your rows survived. Sometimes things can get filled, and sometimes they can get wiped away. It's just really incredible. But Gertrude Jekyll tells us, and Trey tells us, the love of gardening is a seed once sown that never dies, and that's absolutely the truth. I have planted nasturtium seeds, I don't even know, 40 or 50 times in my life. And I still like it. Every time they come up and bloom, I'm still tickled by that. So that's fun. That's really sweet. Let's see now. Scott's in Raleigh. I have 6 blueberry bushes, 3 years in the garden. They have some blueberries on them. When do I need to fertilize them and what's good to use without doing a soil analysis? Well, if your leaf color is good and you're getting some fruit, your soil is probably okay, but what you want to do are two things. First of all, you want to, after the fruit comes off, you know, after you pick it, we want to circle the bushes with a layer of about 1/2 inch to 1 inch of composted manure. That's as acidic as you need it to be. Scratch that into the surface and then use a fertilizer made for acid-forming plants like blueberries. You'll find that without any problem. There's both natural-sourced ones as well as commercial. So if you happen to be feeding azaleas and you have that same fertilizer, you can use that on blueberries too. But you want to do that to assure yourself that you have enough of an acid environment, do the compost. That also gives them lots of nitrogen for the summer, and that's very helpful. So then add your other fertilizer, keep them watered, and you'll see much growth, and then you'll probably be rewarded with fall color too. It's early enough in the year that you won't be undoing that. I do love the fall color on blueberries. It's so pretty. I don't know why we don't use it as a front yard hedge more often. Would be real smart. Let's see now. Oh, how fun. Okay, let's see. Lyman's in Monticello. The yard is got stickers. Oh, yeah. I know about that. Scott's Turf Builder and the fertilizers. Would you tell me about the stickers? Well, it's a 66-year-old St. Augustine lawn. I'm a mature enough person to be able to tell you that a 66-year-old St. Augustine lawn is a wonderful thing. However, if the sticker weed is the thing that is the problem, we're not getting enough water into the actual, it's one that thrives in dry conditions. It's that's why it's all over pieces of my garden bed that I don't water. Okay. It's not in my lawn because it stays wet from too much rainfall and everything else that happens in my neighborhood. But the beds themselves are elevated and they don't get wet, get watered as nearly as often. But the sticker weed itself will thrive in that drier condition. So here's what I think. I believe that it's time to do a soil test on the St. Augustine and also to take a look at the thatch. What happens is, over a period of time, if the lawn is healthy, it's lush and green, but at the same time, what happens over time, it's aging, it's not growing as fast, and the pH of the soil may be changing, which is likely to be the case. You may need to get it a little bit of an adjustment there, or it may just be that the thatch is so thick that the water that does come to the lawn is not actually getting into the root zone, and that's why the sticker weed can thrive. So it's benefited by drier conditions than the St. Augustine prefers. So find out why the St. Augustine's not getting what it needs. Might be the thatch. Might be simply being mowed too many times at the same height. You know, you need to change the mowing height. But it's probably either a matter of thatch or a soil situation where the soil is at the wrong pH, and therefore nothing's working right. Okay, so do those two things: test the soil and check the thatch. I like a 66-year-old St. Augustine lawn, though. My goodness, it's nothing to mess around with. You got to get it going good. I like it. Andrea, oh, that's so pretty. The Northern Lights. And yes, they were visible in Madison and Flowood last night. Things you never thought you would say. The Northern Lights were visible in Mississippi last night. Stuff you didn't think would come out of your mouth. But it's true. Oh, my goodness. Let's see. Should I trim this fig tree? Yes. It by now, it's got its growth coming out the bottom, but the rest of the branches are still bare. Yes, you're only going to have what's there at the bottom, at the ground level. So absolutely go ahead and do that. You may see that there is some green in that stem that you cut off. That's okay. You can leave it 4 or 5 inches tall. You can go to the ground level if it's dead, but you can also leave it 4 or 5 inches up, but you're going to have to start this thing over again, which is okay. It'll do fine. It will do fine. You know, one of the things that people talk about all the time with varying levels of, I don't know, how do I say this? I don't know everything, but sometimes I can see that things are not making any sense. And some of the ideas that people have for what to plant next to one another, I'm never going to discount anecdotal notice. You know, somebody says, my grandmother grew plant A next to plant B, and they both did better than they did by themselves. Okay, that's great. Let's try it. You know, but I don't have any proof to be able to give to you in terms of a scientific study for something. But there's a lot of anecdotal evidence about companion planting. And I think sometimes we don't take advantage of the diversity that creates. My opinion is that it is actually the diversity of the planting as much as what you plant next to each other, particularly in vegetables and herbs, that makes the difference. Here's why. If we have known, you've seen this in your life probably. If not, you've seen it in other people's yards, and it's a sad story. One shrub over here starts getting leaf spot, and nobody does anything about it. And in about 2 years, all 10 of the shrubs have it, okay, because things spread that way. And if we have another plant in between even those shrubs, it's less likely that the ones on the other side of it are going to get it because there's not any contact. The same thing is true in the garden. If your tomatoes, for example, are not planted so that they have good air spacing around each plant, which is another reason, by the way, that I like growing them in great big containers, because then each plant has plenty of space. But anyway, the whole notion being that we're going to give them enough room to grow and also enough room to not impinge on the one next to it, because insects can jump from leaf to leaf, from plant to plant, and so can diseases. So that's one of the reasons why we do this. If we put a lot of different plants together, the smells, the sights, and the actual physical proximity can be confusing to the insects that would like to tear up the entire group. Maybe they'll only get one. So that's one of the things that's talked about. There are several plants that you can grow in the South that are known for their natural qualities of various and sundry ameliorative effects. For example, pyrethrin daisies. My grandmother grew them, and she took the flowers. She'd probably never mixed up any pyrethrin in her life, but she squished up the flowers, crushed them when they were dried, and put them between the mattress and the box spring, put them underneath the sink, put them in a bunch of different places because of their insecticidal quality. She didn't want bed bugs. She didn't have bed bugs. Well, she would have told you that it was because she did this every year. She put the pyrethrin daisies there. I don't know that if, but the pyrethrin is an effective insecticide for a lot of things that we may or may not use it for. For example, we know that pyrethrin, of course, that those are the sprays. Oftentimes they'll be mixed with an insecticidal soap or even sometimes with other natural products, spinosads or neems. But there'll be a product that's intended to deal with tiny piercing and sucking insects like aphids. Well, when you think about it, that's what a bed bug is too. It's a tiny piercing and sucking insect. So it makes sense that she wasn't doing that silly. Now, I don't know exactly why you would do some of these, but some of the recommendations, we always talk about putting basil between tomato plants, in part because we like to harvest them at the same time, and in part because basil can take all the fertilizer that tomatoes take, unlike other herbs. But I think it's just because we like to cook them together. We want to get out there and pick them. If it deters the insects from one to the other by confusing them, all the better. What do you think? Let's talk about it. Welcome in this morning. Thank you for being here. This is the Garden Mama Show.
Another morning to a town so long ago. Where the sweet magnolia blossom, cotton fields were white as snow. Catfish jump was a river hobo. Live and die by the river's bend.
Are you a business owner looking for help with HR benefits and payroll? MWG Employer Services offers a wide range of services and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget.
I was so overwhelmed with HR stuff. MWG Employer Services took all the stress out of it and even set up my payroll. I couldn't be happier.
MWG Employer Services is here to help you succeed. Call us today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWGEmployerServices.com.
Superior. It's more than a name. It's a promise that we make to our customers to provide you the highest quality U.S. farm-raised catfish at your favorite restaurant, your family reunion, or on your dinner table. Hey, this is Steve Azar, and I want to let you know that with Superior Catfish, you know the next bite is as good as the first, time after time, made possible by your friends and neighbors here in Mississippi. Remember, there's catfish, then there is Superior Catfish.
Oh, yes. This one always reminds me of go-go boots and people singing, you know, and background harmony and stuff. For the person who always wanted to be a backup singer, unfortunately, I cannot sing. It's quite an image. Welcome in. That is indeed Hugh Masekela, I think, and Grazing in the Grass. That's fun stuff. Crazy old music is part of this. I met someone this week that said, oh, this was the one. You play that old music on the talk radio. Yes, I do. Thank you. Now, we go in and out with music because that's conversational radio. That's talk radio's stock and trade. But the ones that I pick, and the ones that Lance is kind enough to play, are generally speaking recorded before he was born. So some of them before I was an adult, a bunch of them. But there's just something about the earlier rock and roll, not antique rock and roll, but just earlier rock and roll, after it split away from pop and everything else and became its own thing, that it just goes with gardening to me. Gardening is overall a positive activity. It is something that even if you mess it up, you can go back and figure out what you did and fix it about 89% of the time. There's some things, you know, we have plenty of compost because not everything works. But we have the opportunity to get things right even in the second effort. Growing nasturtiums, one of the reasons that I'm so tickled about the ones that are blooming now at my house, is another one of those things that people want to plant as a companion to other things. They are said to deter whiteflies. In that case, I should have them around everything. Or last year I should have. Don't have as many whiteflies this year. I kind of got after that situation. But it's also true that if you have squash bug problems, and see, here I am giving advice about squash as if I could grow squash. I grew one. Been 10 years since I could grow any squash at all, and I keep trying. Used to grow lots of it, but now I've succeeded again, so now I'm willing to tell you that nasturtiums are one of the things that they have traditionally said to plant with squash, I think because it looks pretty, but it's really because they are in fact something that the squash bug moth will be deterred by. I don't know if that's because the flowers look wrong. I don't know. I don't know how that works all the time, but that's one of the ones. Most of the time it's a smell thing. Sometimes it's a sight thing. Paula weighs in. Good morning. We're telling Paula thank you very much for such a fun visit at Rivers and Byram last week. And yes, Lance is going to look like a really, really good son with those presents you sent him. He's going to look great. And by the way, they're blooming. So you provided us with lovely plants. Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Does anybody grow marigolds? Everybody, it's so funny. People will say, well, you know, I grew them, but they got these bugs. Yeah, that's why they're called a companion plant. They're not bringing bugs with them. They're attracting the bugs that would ordinarily be eating the plant next to it that you wanted to survive, whether it's the tomato or whatever it is. And we do try to grow marigolds a couple of times, particularly the tall ones, but even the little short babies, we can plant several times. But we do have to be careful because they will sometimes be a trap crop for other things. Can be very interesting. Kathy, I don't think these blueberries are going to be ripe. I would be surprised. She says that she's got different varieties, different ripening times, which most of us do if we're lucky. But hers are still very red at the ends. And they're not dark purple yet. They're not beginning to be dark. So I think you probably have 10 days anyway, maybe a little bit more. If it depends again on the weather. If it gets cloudy and rains for 4 or 5 days, they're not going to ripen as fast as if it would be sunny and bright and perfect ripening weather. But they are pretty. Here's a good question. Sandy, things are doing well. That's just so beautiful. How do I divide the daisies? How do I divide daisies? Well, generally speaking, when the daisies are finished blooming is a good time to divide them because they are crowded. They're a very nested plant. They'll get their crown going so that they have different ones side off of each other, and that's kind of a problem. So I would suggest that you dig the whole clump up, and sometimes that's most easily done with a curved pitchfork, or it can be done with a shovel. Just depends on your soil. At my place, I like to try to start with a shovel, but oftentimes I end up lifting out with a fork simply because I don't need all the dirt to come with it. And sometimes my roots are more damaged by pulling them from dirt than just by lifting them out of it. So anyway, this is something to think about that. And yes, I cut the flowers off Dusty Miller. I also cut them off of, in fact, I need to do that now because mine has started to bloom. I have a lamb's ear clump that has started to try to bloom, and all those things take away from the production of leaves. They're pretty. I will let them open up just a little bit, and then I'll cut them off and put them in a vase and enjoy them. But I don't want them to sit on there and make seed on the plant, so then it takes away from the leaf production, which is really the point of that one. So that's really nice. Thank you, Paula. Let's see. Oh, my goodness. This is a mess. Jackie from Brandon, I'm going to tell you that I have two suggestions. What we're looking at here is a magnolia tree. It is one of the flowering magnolias, probably star is what it looks like, that it would bloom first and then put the leaves on. It has got a little bit. Maybe it's a little gem. I can't, there's just only a very few leaves. But what I'm going to suggest is the traditional scratch test. And because this is in such a prominent location, unless you find some growth in the top third of it, in other words, scratch off the bark and see if it's green underneath, and wherever you find that it's green, as opposed to the brown that was above it, cut everything else off above it. And it can generate then with fertilizer and some time. But because this is in such a public location, I might consider doing all that, but digging it up and moving it and putting in something that looks nice. I don't think you should ever need to justify letting something regrow, but you also shouldn't justify putting it somewhere that you don't have to look at it every day so you're not worrying about it. I had the experience of living in a ranch-style house for a long time that had windows all across the back rooms. We had horticulture going on in the backyard, lots of plants on tables and things being grown for various events and various uses. And the result of that was that from one side of the house to the other, I could never look out the back window and not see something that needed to be done. I realized then that I don't need to look at my work 24/7. That's why I put the computer in a different room from where I sleep now that I'm a writer, because you need to have those separations of things. And in this case, I think it would be really good to have this tree recover, but it may not. You may not want it to recover in this space. You may want it to recover someplace else. Got one flower, though. And, oh, my goodness. All of those theories that are... It seems counterintuitive. We have a really bad year, record drought, record heat, record cold in some places, and then everything just blooms out beautifully. So our tendency is to say, well, we obviously are trying to survive here. We got to make that seed. The plant's a little nervous. The plant doesn't have that sort of emotion, but the plant does have that reaction to things. And so the fact that it's able to start growing again really does make a big difference. The ones that can't, don't, Oh, fun. We were talking about dehydrated okra last week, and Paula says she won the basket at Rivers, and she says that it was delicious. Do y'all cut your okra in slices that are round, or do you cut them in half and make them long before you roast them? Something to think about. Something to think about. I don't know if there's a good answer for why we do this, but everybody always wants to be a little bit either sooner or quicker or more acid or bigger or different qualities when they talk about their tomatoes. I'm going to report to you today because I'm happy about it. I have about 6 tomatoes that are actually sharpening their skills. They're ripening up. They're getting bigger every day. And I have flowers on all the others. Now, why am I bragging about this? Because, friends, and yes, I know, our friends a little bit to the north, the northern part of Zone 8, I'm in Zone 8 center part, the northern part of Zone 8 and Zone 7 and everybody north of that, y'all have got all kind of good tomato setting weather coming for probably another 2 or 3 weeks at least, if not longer. We, on the other hand, have to look at that 70-degree night as the time when basically the tomatoes will continue to grow, but they stop making fruit. We've got a week in the central part of Zone 8, and a little bit further south, the temperatures are going to be in the 60s for another week at night. That means that it is tomato-setting weather. Rainfall not, you know, rainfall beside this point. You can still go out in the morning and juggle the pollen a little bit, get things to work. So this is our big opportunity to set these fruit that we will then get to harvest over the next several weeks. Doesn't happen that way every year, so I'm happy about that. Really, really fun stuff. Something else that you could be doing, which I should be doing, it's the house plant survey. All those plants that you have had in the house all year and now you've taken them out into the yard or into the shed or into the porch or under the tree or wherever you've put them, got to take a look at them. Some of them are really not going to be great candidates for next year. Other ones, though, with just a little bit of attention, are going to turn out to be just terrific. Check, though, now that you've had them outdoors for a minute, look for insects, because trust me, there's a sign that goes up that basically says, this is the best thing in the world. It's a new plant that you haven't had a chance to devour yet. Come on, bugs. So if you see sticky masses, it's probably mealybugs. You can touch them. You can take a swab or a paintbrush and a little bit of rubbing alcohol and just dot those, and they will go away if you get them at the beginning of their existence in your plants. You should also look always, of course, for spider webs underneath the leaves or on the top surface of the soil. Make sure that if they are outdoors and these are not water-loving plants, that you have a way to protect them when there's 2 or 3 inches of rain predicted for one day. It's really important. Also, the thing about the pyrethrin is talking about, oh, that's nice. More pictures from the lights last night. I'm sorry, it's distracting. It's pink. It's really pretty. Actually, I guess that's fuchsia, but it's just lovely. Anyway, so do that. Take care of those things. Have you got all of your, I hope that everybody puts their stakes in place when they know they've got something, whether it's a dahlia or a tomato or something else that's going to need it. Because when you go in later on and shove in that stick, you can break the roots and cause some damage. You don't need to do that. If you have to, however, brace a stick that's already there, use a triangular, use a base, another stick on it so that your base of your other place you're putting in is farther away. Try really hard not to take apart what you've just created, okay? It's one of those things that we tend to do too much. We tend to give ourselves that a little more than we want to. There are some things going on in the world of science that I am pretty fascinated by, and I don't know. I don't know if we want them to do this. Somebody, you realize that anytime anyone is researching something, it basically is that we don't know why this happens. And so we have to figure it out. That's oftentimes plenty enough. It's some phenomenon. For example, we understand some of the benefits in this case of exercise. And when I think about gardening, I think about reaching and bending and stretching and hand motor fine skills as well as the big muscle skills that it takes to do even just basic gardening. These are not, I'm not talking about laborious. I'm not talking about the three things that I need dug up. Then I'm not going to dig up because they're shrubs, okay? I need a sharp shovel and a very young person with a lot of muscles to do these. But on the other hand, when you have a consistent effort and you work all week and do stuff, you can still get up and not hurt because you've done a little bit every day. And I think that pacing part of it is part of what we all as gardeners have learned. However, the Broad Institute, which is a health management, health research institute at MIT and Harvard, has worked on the health benefits for years, but now they're looking at it at the deeper level. They're trying to find out what happens to your cells when you exercise. And some of it's pretty interesting. Scientists don't fully understand it, of course, because this is just where they've begun to do it. Most studies that they're now able to review have really focused on either men or women or your legs or your arms, you know, or your wrists, or how long you did this particular event for, and that sort of stuff. So it's not really a very comprehensive picture. I'm glad to tell you that they're working on it. Findings are appearing in Nature, and our idea that a little bit more exercise each day in a more well-rounded basis has greater benefits to your cellular life, I'm for it, and I'm celebrating it. All right, this might be the weather forecast for next week. Stick around.
In the gentle evening breeze, hollow whispering shady trees, I'll find my sanctuary in the Lord. In the weather route I roam, I'll find my way back home. I will always return to the Lord. Like a fool for
that nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. A lot of businesses are losing opportunities to get new customers if they're not online. With the power of SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital, you can reach potential customers and get more referral and repeat business. The highly trained and trusted team at SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital is ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get started today.
Be beautiful, Mississippi. Help keep our Mississippi waterways clean and beautiful. Trash travels. Did you know that trash on our roads often ends up in our streams, rivers, and beaches? This affects the water we drink, beaches we play on, and fish we catch. Boating is fun. What you take out on the water, please bring back and dispose properly. For more info on how to keep our waterways beautiful, visit keepmississippibeautiful.com. Be beautiful, Mississippi. If you're feeling it,
well, I got a little garden in my backyard, a little hoeing, a little mowing, but the work ain't hard. It's the cutest little place that you ever did see. I've been working in the garden till I turned green.
Here on National Eat What You Like Day, I say plant what you like, too. Sometimes we get caught up in what the neighbors are doing. You know, everybody wants a crepe myrtle in the front yard in your neighborhood and all those kind of things. Those are great if it suits you. If it doesn't, then by all means, strike out on your own. You're a gardener. You can do that. For those of you who have never taken a look at supertalk.tv and you didn't stay up last night to see the Northern Lights, I'm telling you, you ought to be with us right now. We're not just looking at gorgeous plants today. Today we're looking at gorgeous color in the sky over our area. I'm going to write that one down. I'm not going to get it tattooed on me, but you can see the Northern Lights in Mississippi. Now, you understand this is because of the solar storms, right? This is not some random, you know, it's... I do wonder, before people had science, you always hear about those things where they felt like some spiritual thing had happened, and that's why there was an eclipse, or that's why there was beautiful colors in the sky or something, or we were being invaded or whatever they thought. It's science. It's okay. We can appreciate it and be amazed at the wonderful things that science can do for us. To Nancy and Mike, gorgeous flowers, Lamar County. So, so beautiful. Yes, it's time for peanuts. It's also time for moonflowers, my friends. I am always a fan of planting moonflowers and morning glories on the same trellis, because then you have flowers day and night. If you put 4 o'clocks at the base of them, you have a clock garden. Okay, you have morning, afternoon, and night flowers at that point. It can be a very fun thing to do. It can give you a little joy, and it's something that you can do now. You don't have to wait. You don't have to show up later, but the clock garden particularly is a big deal in the summer. It can be fun to do. Yes, they're great. Great idea. Using tomato cages that you're not using to grow tomatoes around tall dahlias. You're absolutely right. It's so smart. The reason that the dinner plate dahlias, generally speaking, the bigger the dahlia flower, the bigger the dahlia plant. Not exclusively so, but pretty much. So if you're growing a dahlia that says it's a dinner plate size, it is a dinner plate size. It'll be bigger than your head. And the plant's pretty big too. So that's why we're talking about supporting them as opposed to the little ones that you buy in the seedling, in the six pack. That's different. That's a little dahlia. It's pretty. but you would be making a teeny tiny bouquet with it as opposed to having flowers bigger than your head. Maybe not always the way to go, but when dahlias do that, it is very impressive. Kathy is, I love Kathy. This is a good story. By the way, yes, you can sow the basil right out there in the warm soil next to the tomatoes. She has marigolds that she planted with her tomatoes last year that have reseeded everywhere. Yes, be sure that you give them 3 to 4 inches between stems. But yes, you can transplant them. You can thin them out if you just need to do that. But do give them a little room to grow. Give them a little bit more room than you might think necessary. They will hold each other up at 4 inches apart, which is the point. They're tall. They can be floppy sometimes. But no, I don't think you messed up anything. That's great. Let's see. Oh, how lovely. Arlene and Biloxi, this is Arlene and Lauren. They're our north and south gardeners. They garden in northern Wisconsin, and then they come to Biloxi for the summer. It's great. Wonderful, wonderful. First gladiola to bloom here in Biloxi is bright yellow. It's beautiful. I feel like it's blooming for me because that's my favorite. And they brought the bulbs from their plot up north. That's really fun. Glad to hear from y'all. And yes, yellow wax beans. Me and yellow wax beans are dear friends. So you'll always get my attention with those. Ooh, speaking of yellow wax beans and other sorts of beans, there's a bunch of different points of view out here. It's like the okra thing. Do you cut them in slices or do you cut them long ways? Do you roast them? Do you boil them? What do you do to them? And the same is true about beans. I've come to the conclusion that I actually like yellow beans and green beans to be raw when they're pencil sized or pickled. Now, I don't know why that's come to me in the recent time, but I think I'm always looking for another way to cook things without as much seasoning, as much salt, as much fat and whatnot as we would put into those particular things. And I like green beans and new potatoes, but you don't always have both. So what are you going to do with the green beans? And in the case of thinking about how to redo the okra, I did do a little sharp roast on some green beans, and it turned out to be absolutely delicious. And they were not that good to start with. They were not great beans, but they improved. A little oil, a little salt and pepper, put them into a hot oven. Turned out to be a really good idea. You might want to do that, too. Not that the beans you grow won't be perfect, but just in case. Speaking of greens, I have got a green patch of vinca that is now in too much shade. This is the trailing vinca that makes a little purple flower on it. Some people like it. Some people don't. Some people only grow the variegated leafed one because it isn't as aggressive. But I like it to fill a space. However, the space has gotten so shady that I got like 2 flowers where I used to have 50. And I'm not going to cut the tree down above it. I think what I would like to do, and I don't disagree that you might want to do this, take the head shears and shear off after those flowers have finished. Give it just a little bit of flower formula fertilizer. So if it was a case where there was just too much nitrogen in there, we'd still get a little flower action later on. But I'm just going to appreciate it for the thick green carpet that it produces, so I don't have to mow it. I don't have to string trim it. And actually, you can walk on it if you need to. I don't need to in that space, but you could if you needed to. When you've got a ground cover, put it to work. Let it be vigorous. Let it be, you know, let it take the space for you and let it prevent you from having to do other work. I think that's a real important part of understanding how we use our ground covers. They got to work just like everything else, okay? You know what else has been so pretty? Looking around at everyone's gardens this last week or two, the cannas have started to bloom. I am a little disturbed that the cannas and mimosas are blooming and it's only Mother's Day, okay? But if anything, in the lore of gardening, it predicts that the summer will be brutally hot, so they're getting it out of the way sooner. I don't know, but we'll have to wait and see about it. But they sure have been pretty. Let's see. Joe and Madison, hello. Yeah, we're talking about the northern lights. We don't know if we can see them tonight, but we're hopeful. And, Joe, if you'll go to supertalk.tv, you'll see lots of pictures from last night because there's some beautiful shots y'all have sent us today. Well, here's an interesting observation. I prefer to let beans mature and eat the bean rather than the pod. You know, that really does depend. Just when you see a can in the grocery store and it says field peas and snaps, that's part of what that is. That's part of the pod snapped before the peas, but it's also the peas that have been shelled from it. We do eat both things. In some cases, for me, for example, nobody's, I don't think, going to eat the pod that a lima bean grows in unless it's tiny, you know, hasn't had a chance to get hairy and be weird yet. Because as they mature, they are far from an edible pod. They're intended to protect the to protect the seed from anything else getting up there and eating it. Okay, so that's one of the pieces of the puzzle, is what exactly is it that we are trying to do. If we're trying to gather seeds to plant the bean again, obviously we're going to let some of them mature. If we want to eat them, then let them mature and see whether or not they taste good. There's some that do and some that don't. My favorite one to grow as a bean that looks like a bean in the first place but grows and produces a delicious seed are horticultural beans. I know, it's not exactly a glamorous name, but if you run into them, plant them. They're good. Wowie zowie, that was some green screen stuff going on up there. No, that's okay.
I'm trying to figure something out here.
I like it. There's a little techno going on in the background. Hey now, come on. We got more work to do. Stick around. Don't forget, mark your calendar for June the 3rd at Lakeland, 9:30 in the morning. I'll tell you more about that as we get closer. All right now, this is the New Frontier, y'all. It's the Garden Mama Show.
Huntington's disease is a fatal and genetic disease described as having ALS, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's simultaneously. Join us in the fight against Huntington's disease at the 3rd Mississippi Team Hope Walk on Saturday, May 18th at 9 a.m. at Flowood Nature Park in Flowood. You can learn more by visiting hdsa.org/THWMS.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned almost $100 million in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now, he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, Max and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused career jobs and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jump start on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae at treasury.ms.gov.
I'm Rex.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Surprise, surprise, surprise. You can see the northern lights in Mississippi. We're still going on about this, y'all. If you're tuning in today and you think things look a little different, it's because I'm floating in space. This is fun, Lance.
You are in the dark matter of the universe.
Exactly.
Now.
Exactly. This is marvelous. I like what it does to the pattern on my shirt.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. It's so cool. It totally changes your wardrobe.
It's entirely different. Now, the good news is we're still the Garden Mama Show, but we are now part of the Northern Lights. And no, I don't know if you'll be able to see them tonight, but the good news is we will now be permanently in place in the archive.
And thanks for the awesome pictures to play
y'all.
With. That's a great backdrop.
Thank you so much. I'm not sure who took which ones. They're just beautiful.
And we did this without the green screen. This was with the blue screen. That's why it matches
We're
up a little.
So
but hey, this is Star Trek stuff here. If we wouldn't have had our wonderful, classical gas with the chimes, I would have played the Star Trek theme song, which is
here
one
we
of
are
my favorites.
Exactly. Here we are. Well, let's face it. I mean. I don't know. I have so many Star Trek things I could say right now, but I'll just hold on to all of that.
Well, I'm going to let the people have a break from the trippiness of it.
No, I don't think so.
But you like it for a minute?
I think it's great.
All right, cool. I think
it's hilarious. It's wonderful. The solar flares, the solar storm this is a record breaker, okay? And indeed, that's why we're able to see the Northern Lights in Mississippi. I just can't hear that come out of my mouth without laughing. Really good stuff. Really fun stuff. Y'all are doing a good job today cranking out the text for me, and I appreciate that. You know, always, it's not that we're competitive, but we really like to get a new record every week in the spring when we can for the numbers of people who are willing to check in here, not only on the streams and all that, but the radio stations. Thank you. Goodness gracious. Those of us who are radio clowns, as they say in the larger sense of things, really appreciate that we have you all to listen. When I was a kid, my mother grew indestructible daylilies. And I do not have that particular one. It's not lemon drop. It's another one of the old yellow ones. Probably a clump, probably 3.5 or so feet tall, and then the flowers shot up from that. They died. They were deciduous. They lost their leaves in the wintertime in Zone 8. There are some daylilies, of course, that don't, and there's some that do. There's some that lose some of them. It's various. Depends on which daylily it is. But in the case of those old yellow ones, I say they were indestructible because they literally got mowed over, had things parked on top of them, and every year they still came up and did a beautiful, beautiful job. That's why we like daylilies. Daylilies are our version, I think, in the South. We talk about how people love crocus because they bloom every year. You know, they can wait for them and they'll come up and bloom every year, and that's really delightful. But in our case, the same thing's true of the daylilies. Now, they only last for one day, but there's lots and lots and lots of them. So I'm in favor of them. This is the first week in my garden. Suburban Nancy Gale, bred, of course, by Earl Watts in Hattiesburg, is absolutely that. It's all that brilliant stuff. And this, in fact, is the time of year when we're looking at all of those shows. I have that note here someplace too. Don't forget that we've got so much going on in our daylily world that the Gulf Coast daylily folks, everybody's, it's that time. And if you have never been to their shows, if you've never visited with them, you don't know what you're missing. These are some great folks and some wonderful, wonderful plants. Oh, I spend so much time talking about what we can grow in the shade, because we have problems growing things in the shade, whether it's that ground cover or whether it's can we get any flowers or can we grow the lawn and all those things. But what about the really hot, sunny places? We don't think about them as much because perhaps we take for granted that things will grow there. Well, in some cases they will, in some cases they won't. I want you to make sure that you've got the euphorbias in your pocket. And I don't mean poinsettia, although that is one of them. The sedges, the crazy things, from Little Bitty Diamond Frost that I like so much, all the way to Ascot Rainbow and these other things that are much bigger and have crazy flowers on them, they're all going to be latex-based. That means that their stems and things are full of white, oozy stuff. That's part of what gives them the opportunity to survive so well in hot, dry spaces. They got their own internal system. So give yourself an opportunity to check that out. You may not have grown them before, and if you haven't, I think you'll be glad that you did. I certainly have been. I love those plants. They're fun. I will tell you that one of the Ascot Rainbows got eaten alive in the garden bed. I'm going to have to lift it out. It's still under there, but it got run over completely by Autumn Joyce Sedum for some reason. I don't know why. But anyway, let's see. Debbie says, leave that up there. Thank you. We appreciate that. That's fun. Let's see. And our same caller that we don't know who is, who likes the beans better than the pod, says scientists have learned how to manipulate weather. I'm going to just lay that out there and leave it there. You can make of it what you will. Send me a couple of sites and I'll be glad to talk about it more. Oh, Bovina weighing in. Ooh, that's beautiful, Jeremy. That's gorgeous. Thank you. Wow. We're going to have the best collection of anybody. They'll be coming to us asking for our pictures of the Northern Lights in Mississippi. That's right. Do y'all like sugarcane? I hope you do. I know that we think of it as that plant that stands next to the, looks kind of like corn. You know, it's got the bamboo-ish looking stalks on it. has tall grass and you think of it in the fall. Well, that's where sugar comes from, where cane sugar comes from, where cane syrup comes from. It also all comes from my home state of Louisiana, not all of it, but a whole bunch of it does, because that area south of south is so perfect for growing that stuff. But how come it's been like bananas in that we found this one that really worked well and grows in many, many different places, and we would like that to be the one? Well, when you monoculture anything, of course, it presents a lot of problems. And sugarcane has had some of those things. If we are concerned in the same way we are with the Cavendish bananas, if the Cavendish bananas get a serious disease that takes them out worldwide, you're not going to have your banana, and neither am I. That's a problem. So think about the way we're looking at these things in monoculture, and be very happy that the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory has now unwound the genetic code of sugarcane. Now, why is this important? Well, because it gives us more entry points into, in the same way that we've been able to develop corn that does well in many, many places because we understand the basics of the maize that it came from, we have that same opportunity now. Interestingly enough, I think this is so cool. This is the most complicated genome sequence that they have ever completed. At the Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory, This is better than world class. This is world class. Okay. If they're doing it, it's important, first of all. And if they're doing it and it's the biggest they found, you can rely on that as a fact. The complex, it's so large because it also contains more copies of chromosomes than a typical plant. This is a thing that's called polyploidy. I learned about it when the little bit of instruction that I took or classes and work that I did in tissue culture. You're always looking for that in a plant because it does give you something more to base your judgments on about it and something more to chart the future. So it's really interesting. The human genome has, for example, just for comparison, about 3 billion. Okay, 3 billion, billion base pairs, the building blocks of DNA. But sugarcane has about 10 billion. So when you want to know what's more complex, the sugarcane's more complex than you and I. Absolutely is. Paula, it says that she loves it, and we the fun, making syrup is fun. I don't know if you've ever been.
Oh, I've made syrups out of everything.
Uh-oh, this maybe is
out of
be
sweet
dangerous.
Potatoes. sweet potatoes make a great syrup. It's very
yeah,
light.
Yeah, that's true.
Make some really good stuff out there out of things you don't think. Plantain the syrup's pretty interesting.
I wanted to tell you the elderberry's blooming in my back garden. So goodness. I think we have a project ahead of us. Oh, nobody else is interested, but we both want to fool with that elderberry.
I can think of a bunch of things I'd like to put it in and drink.
Well, that's my point, is that it is very sophisticated. Saint-Germain and all those things, I mean, it's very sophisticated stuff. It's in bloom. We consider it a weed in our backyard, not mine. I love it. But other people cut it down because it's in the way of something.
Well, if you have any creative people out there that grow ginger, make a ginger liqueur. You have Domaine de Canton.
Oh, there's a bunch
excellent.
Of people that do that.
And ginger liqueur is delicious, and you can put it on about anything. And I don't mean just for like a cocktail, but for using it in cooking.
You can marinate fish in it.
Yeah,
it's wonderful.
Syrups are great to mm-hmm. play around with. Mm-hmm. You just make sure you keep them cool after you make them. If they have any fruit or any spoilable things
right.
in it especially,
don't
think it's like
no,
Aunt
we're
Jemima
not trying to create a
lot.
No, we're not trying to create a laboratory.
Can't keep that stuff in the pantry, but you can definitely, and it's hard to say how long things will last, but if you know you're not going to use it for a while, you can always throw it in the freezer and then bring it back out.
Make the ice cube things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. make some, and the elderberry with ice cubes would be.
Come on now. You know.
And even just mint ice cubes. I love making syrup out of mint. Get some really fresh mint and get a lot of it. Get your water
I need
warm.
I need another start of mint. I have another place I want to. I want to grow it in a gutter on the ground. Don't worry, I'm not putting this on my house. But I have a gutter I want to grow mint in.
In the spearmint kind.
Yeah.
The really good. It really tastes like you're eating a Wrigley's spearmint, whatever it is you want.
I love that. Yeah. What about fractals, y'all? Come on, is there anything more beautiful than nature's art that creates those fractal patterns? I mean, probably classically, you would think of. Of a Romanesco cauliflower, you know, with all the little peaks and the little beautiful, magnificent
heirloom tomatoes. You know,
heirloom tomatoes do that. The new sunflower family tree, we're just digging into all of these things in lately. Penn State's working on them, and they have actually found multiple places in the sunflower plant that can create the flower symmetry that, of course, we associate with becoming the fractal of that particular flower. Really very, very cool. They tried to figure out why this whole family, the sunflower family, you know, asters and daisies and artichokes and all those things, how they all came from this one thing. How did they develop? How did they evolve? So what they're working on, and I love this, is the plant, the publication, Plant Communication. Here's another one I didn't know existed. Now, that's going to be something. The sunflower head, of course, is generally radically symmetric. It can be divided in two halves in multiple directions. That's what that word radical means when in terms of symmetry. Like a starfish, like a pie. Okay? Now, but the individual flowers themselves can have different kinds of symmetry. And that's what they've been exploring. This bilateral symmetry has really come about and been lost multiple times in sunflowers, which is why we have so many sunflowers. I love that. Really fascinating stuff. If you are looking for the plants that you don't need, this goes back into my idea. Somebody sent me a picture of this plant. Looks kind of like lettuce, but it's about 3 feet tall. She said it has the milky stuff, and I said, "Yeah, don't bring that near me. They make me itch." It's prickly lettuce, and it is. It's not actually lettuce, but it is prickly. You know, sometimes we say that plant is neither the thing of its name, but in this particular case, I get itchy skin. Now, it's appreciated by a lot of things. It doesn't bother most people, but it bothers me. It is a plant, though, that is almost indomitable. It will come up and attach itself to a chain link fence in a parking lot. There is nothing there for it to grow in, but it will grow right up to it and be smacked into that fence and grow on both sides of it. It's a tough, tough plant. And they exist because they exist. But in terms of the things that drive me crazy, that will make me itch in the same way that poison ivy will. I want to give you this piece of advice. Find someone near you that does not get affected by these things. Don't think that you're going to suit up and go out and pull all this stuff out. Don't think that you're going to put a bunch of sprays out and it's going to go away. Those things don't happen. That can be part of the process, but you're still physically removing it is a better thing. And if you are allergic to these things or if you are sensitive to them, that's not the way to go. So give yourself the opportunity to get somebody else into your employ. Oh, one of the things that really, gosh, I went out this morning and looked. There's new growth happening here, and there's new vines coming out over there. I'm going to have even more Smilax. Anyway, anybody here eat Smilax? I'd be love to give y'all some. Anyway, King Solomon is said to have talked about when you train a child up the way that he should grow, when he is old, he will not depart from that way. Okay, and that this is not necessarily true with people. We hope it is true with people, but it is very true with vines. So, for example, the tree that is coming down at my place is a hackberry that's next to another hackberry that has orange trumpet creeper climbing through it. I noticed that there's vine beginning to grow in the one that's about to come down, so I have to get it back over to the other tree. This is so complicated. But if I do it while it's soft and supple, it's a lot easier to train and to move than it will be later on after it hardens off. After it hardens off, you usually can't even break these vines. You'd end up having to cut it just to get them disconnected. So I'm working on it that way to put them in a little bit better situation, I hope. A little bit better. We shall see. Morning glories. Oh, my goodness. Morning glories and moonflowers right now. Please plant your peanuts. Please plant your caladiums. Please plant, so many things. I think about Madagascar periwinkle. They've been in the stores for ages, but most of the prettiest ones that you've seen have been in baskets. Now you'll begin to see them in 4-inch and 2-inch pots. for planting into the garden because it's a better time for that now than it was before. It's also a fine time for paying attention to your hostas. I have a couple that I'm going to plant in the shady area in the front that I've been working on, and I think it might work up there. There's enough shade that they'll be able to bloom, but they won't be baked by the heat. Not that I always compare everything to my neighbors, but, well, my neighbor has hostas that by July usually look like somebody put a torch to them because they're in too much sun. They do bloom, and the flowers are lovely, but the plants look really burned up, so it's difficult. I don't like it so much. Reminded me this week of the Walt Whitman quote, "A morning glory at my window satisfies me more than the metaphysics of books." I think that means it can be a spiritual experience. What do you think? All right, now, for those of you who are really in the Wayback Machine with me today, you will recognize this as High Heel Sneakers. We'll be back.
Harvested in June and July, Mississippi-grown sweet corn arrives just in time for your cookout or outdoor get-together. But you better be quick. Once Mississippi-grown sweet corn appears on your local farmers market shelves, it disappears just as fast. There are so many ways to cook and eat Mississippi-grown sweet corn, but of course our favorite is corn on the cob.
Sweet corn, just one of the many foods the Mississippi farmer grows for you, the farm families of Mississippi.
You know that nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. Do you have an old, outdated website or just a Facebook page and still not bringing in customers? Targeted digital advertising from SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital's highly trained and trusted staff is the answer. We're ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get an
just sing like that. Maybe I can't so I could live a long time. I don't know. It was a sad thing to lose her so early. We wished she'd still be belting them out, you know? But you can't fix foolishness, and that's what that did. Harump, harump, harump. Can I talk to Justin and Brandon, please? Good morning. Welcome in, Justin. Thanks
hey,
for calling.
You?
Doing well, thanks.
Excellent. Yeah, I had a question for you. About 6 years ago, my wife and I bought a house here in Brandon, and it had a big, you know, kind of bushy plant out front that I believe my neighbor had planted it, but it's just on the property line, so I think it's technically on ours. Maybe his, doesn't matter. We get along really well anyway, so it doesn't matter. However, about 3 weeks ago, I was cutting my grass, and I noticed that there was a shoot sticking out of the middle of it, about 6 foot tall. So, and I had forgotten that it's an agave plant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, over the next 3 weeks, it has gone from about 6 foot to about 12 or 14 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my question for you was, I guess there was different kind of species and stuff, but, you know, once it does bloom, you know, how tall will it be before it blooms, and how long does that bloom last?
Well, it lasts long enough that the news media and all your neighbors will be standing around staring at it for maybe a week or two.
Okay, okay.
You know, this okay, is probably a century plant. We have quite a few. Is it grayish? The leaves are grayish looking.
Ma'am?
Are the leaves grayish?
Kind of, yeah, they're like a grayish green. Yes,
there you go. Well, we have a bunch of those. I can remember when I was first in Mississippi in the 90s, when I moved here, somebody said, you got to go with me. Let's go. We're going to Canton. And I thought we were going to the flea market. Well, we were actually going to see the century plant bloom at somebody's house. And it was magnificent. They're huge.
Wow.
They're tall. People come from all over the place when they get into bloom because they're so spectacular. They don't actually take another 100 years to bloom in most cases, but they're pretty rare. So I would say
right.
It's maybe going to be 20 feet tall by the time it blooms, and it'll probably last for 2 weeks. Magnificent plant.
Excellent. Okay, good.
I'm so glad you and your neighbors get along.
Cool.
That would be really terrible something to argue about. So I'm glad y'all get along.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he came out and was like, well, when it blooms, you know, I want to get a picture with it. I was like, oh, I'm sure.
You will.
Plenty of those.
You will. There'll be there. People bring ladders, you know. I mean, trust me, you're going to have fun. It's a wonderful plant, and we don't get to see them all the time. So that's fun. Thanks for calling, letting us know. We won't give anybody your address.
We need some pics when that thing blooms.
Yeah,
too.
No, by all means, we need the video, the drone, the whole thing. So send it to us. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, I'll definitely do that. And you have a happy Mother's Day.
Thank you very much. I'll take care now. That's one of those plants that the neighbors are going to talk, and you're glad of it. Sometimes things bloom, you don't necessarily want them to talk. I have powdery mildew on my crepe myrtle. I don't want the neighbors to talk about that. They might want me to fix it, but I'm not going to. Let's see now. Very sandy soil, 10 miniature azaleas won't bloom. Okay. This is not simple, but it is easy in that what you need to do is add more organic matter to the soil and also use a fertilizer made to create more acidic constancy in the pH of the soil underneath them. Sandy soil is traditionally not that soil. So you might get a soil test if you want to. That's a good idea. It's never a bad idea. But on the other hand, I can tell you that regular applications of organic matters, particularly well-composted leaves or composted manure, that kind of stuff, working that into the bed, using a fertilizer that's made for them, you can turn this around, but it's going to take this summer and then probably part of next year as well. If you do this work this summer, though, side dress all of them, dress all around them, side dress them with fertilizer made for azaleas, and also apply a nice compost to the bed and then some organic mulch on top of that. Keep them watered this summer. You'll probably get some flowers next year. And if not, certainly the year after that. Now, again, this is a case where if this is your front yard and you're sick of looking at them, you have my permission. You don't need it, but you have my permission to go ahead and move them and put something else there that will take the conditions a little easier. For those of you who are just tuning in, because luckily we have people that are always just tuning in, the site that you see is me. The rest of the site that you see at supertalk.tv is the Northern Lights. That's really very cool. Y'all sent the most beautiful pictures. Oh, my goodness.
Thank and we you. Have a few that actually there's in the pictures rotating through. You have there's like the Northern Lights over the Northern Lights.
Yes, so, yes. Yeah, I mean, we've got a couple of different things going on here. That starburst especially makes me think that they're coming for me. I love
they
that
they are. They're just not here yet. It's probably millions of miles away before they, you know, that's.
Well, it's okay. It doesn't take very long. We'll be here.
I want to know where y'all were last night.
Yeah.
Those types of things. Because I didn't see any of that. It just was dark.
No.
What time of day was that? I mean, it looks like it was 6:30 in the afternoon, 7 o'clock.
I don't think so, though.
8 now, but yeah, that's beautiful, guys.
It's really something. I went out and looked. I didn't see a thing, but then I have,
you and me both.
I have pretty much tree canopy.
I may have been wearing those eclipse glasses or something.
Maybe that was the problem.
You couldn't see anything out of those, but.
That was the problem. We're still listening for the cicadas, you know. Well, I don't know about y'all. we talk about all the benefits of gardening. We talk about it being, you know, cheaper than therapy. Not, no offense to my therapist, but it's cheaper than therapy, and you can eat it. You know, you can get something, put the flowers on your table, and enjoy the cooler temperature from being surrounded by green hedges rather than out in the parking lot somewhere. All of those benefits are true and real. The mental health benefits, though, are even bigger. And since May is Mental Health Month, I don't want to miss a chance to let you know about the ways that plants connect people to better health. And oftentimes, it is simply a matter of that getting away from one thing and getting to something else. I've been so intrigued by the idea that mowing the lawn is a job you can finish. It's not like so many other things that go on forever. It does have to be done over and over again, but it is a job that you can complete, go in the house, take a shower, go out to dinner. You don't have to come back and do it that night. You know, there's, it's not even like walking the dog. It doesn't happen as often. Okay. So those are things that I think are some of the comforting benefits of gardening that we might take for granted. We might not know all the time. One of the worst pieces of mental health confusion or mental health issue to deal with, I think, is apathy. There are some pieces of it that fall into depression and some that fall into just about every other category of mental health issue. But the apathy itself, the absolutely not caring, I can't curse here, so I won't tell you how I would ordinarily express this, but we'll just say the rat's patootie. You know, you just don't care. You could give less. And that's really
Frankly, Scarlett,
and it's a true feeling. I have had it myself at times in my life. It's not healthy. It does put up a wall between you and whatever the crisis or the problem or the dead plant is in this case, but it doesn't do anything about it. So the good news is that the folks in Norway are trying to find a way, and the way that they're looking at this is so, to me, Scandinavian that I just wanted to bring it to y'all. If you just can't be bothered, you feel like you're just, if that's what the definition is of apathy is, you would have liked to have done something, but you didn't. You would have liked to have, you know, gone on and finished that dress or that project or that, but it's just too much trouble. It didn't want to do it. You're apathetic about it. If so, what the Norwegians, what the Scandinavians believe, and I think maybe my grandmother would have believed, even though she was not Scandinavian, is that you need more grit. Not that you need more grit, but you need more determination. You need more. You need to look at yourself harder and recognize what you can do. And I like this, not because I want people to be forced to things. You know, they always say you're not living up. They don't always. People are often told that you're not living up to the expectations. You're not living up to your potential. And some people are very happy about that, which is because it's a more comfortable place. It is in some ways, though, a denial in the same way that apathy is of your hidden inner potential. You can grow that plant. And that's why horticulture therapy works so well, even in things that are considered, for people that are considered, for instance, to be apathetic. If I just get you to do point one, two, and three, and the plant blooms or the seed comes up or the tomato ripens or whatever it is that we're trying to do, the reaction in you is going to be positive. It is also going to be building. It is going to tell you that I can do this again. Maybe I can even do another thing that is not necessarily this thing, but is like this thing and moves into the next phase of it. So that innate potential that I can do this, si se puede, if you will, that, you know, we can get there. We can make this happen. Those are not expressions that we say blindly or coldly. We say them because we have ways to make them happen. And gardening is one of the ways to get past apathy. Very important one. Because, frankly, you waste your life feeling apathetic. It feels like a defense. It feels like it's safer sometimes. It's not. Trust me. Been there, done that. Been there, done that. Now, Another thing about feeling apathetic, if you watch somebody else garden, maybe it's going to make you want to garden, but maybe it's just going to get your appreciation out. When my neighbor comes over and mows my front yard, I have a great deal of joy in that, and I'm not doing it. I mean, I'm appreciating him, and it is kind of a competition because depending on how it's going, I may have gotten the edge of the bed tailored before he gets there to do the outside. I don't know. But it's always a competition in my own head to see how it's going to look. Well, this week, one of his tires is obviously running out of air. So it dragged, and I've got some patches and some draggy patches that are not going to work for the future of my lawn. I got to go out there and do something about it. But I think I'm just going to go over and pump up his tire a little bit on his lawnmower. I'd never think to tell you to pay attention to those things. And this week it was so graphic that I wanted to – I have little swaths in my yard where you can see he turned, and the one tire wasn't as equally – inflated. So something to think about. If you can't figure out what's wrong, look at the machine sometimes. This story from Waseda University, though, is telling us that, as we all understand, there's a lot to be said for participating in sports. We talk all the time, my dad was a coach. My dad felt like it was one of the civilizing things. It's why we don't go out necessarily and beat up each other in the streets, because we can go watch a sporting event, take that energy into a more positive arena. Well, actually watching sports now, I think this might be from the 21st century scientific. Watching sports is good for you. There are a lot of people that would disagree with that. Not me, probably not Lance, probably not a lot of you, but there are some folks that I never knew the term football widow, for example, until my husband decided he was a baseball widow. I would watch baseball for hours on end. Well, I like it. It's like wallpaper. You know, you can wander through and see what just happened. It's fun. But that whole thing, the notion that we're going to watch sports and get something out of it, you know, sports are – it's entertaining, obviously. It does bring people together in a sense of community. Sometimes it also engenders conflict, which is not necessarily unhealthy. But nobody's really looked into the couch potato aspect or the bleacher bum aspect, which are both two of my favorite things. And I really like the idea that baseball particularly impacts your well-being when you watch it. Y'all think I'm making this up. I can tell. I'm not. The team of researchers worked on a groundbreaking study to try and understand secondary data analysis, of course, the reports from the people themselves that were the subjects of the study, and also neuroimaging to see what was going on in their brains at the same time. This did measure the connection in a better way than we've done. We still got to do a lot of it, but we are now measuring the connection between sports viewing and well-being in the general population. I'm telling you, there are people, and I'm one of them sometimes, who would actually rather watch somebody else mow the yard than do it myself. I'm the same way about baseball. I love to watch baseball. Used to love to play. I would love to play if I wasn't so gawky now. But I got to tell you, connecting those two things, we're going to see some great programs coming out in the next period of time. How many hours a week are you watching? You need to watch more baseball. You know it's true. All right. Only you know and I know that we'll be right back.
Every child of a parent with Huntington's disease has a 50-50 chance of inheriting the Huntington's disease, which is described as having ALS, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's simultaneously. Join us in the fight against Huntington's disease at the 3rd Annual Mississippi Team Hope Walk, Saturday, May 18th at 9 a.m. at Flowood Nature Park in Flowood. To learn more, visit hdsa.org/THWMS.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall. Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
Hey guys.
Thank you, Justin. Great pictures of that century plant. We now have a new thing to follow. It's great.
Thing's amazing.
I mean, yeah.
It's like an alien.
Well, and that's what's so much fun about it. You don't expect it to be there, first of all, and then you don't, because it looks like the Southwest. You know, it doesn't look like it belongs. It's very much the same as when you see our native cactus blooming, the paddle cactus that puts the yellow flowers on top of it. When you see those things bloom, you think, where am I? Well, you're here, because that's what we do. That's, we have these too. It's great. So much fun. I wish we could put a sensor on it. MIT is letting us know that there's some marvelous potentialities for plant sensors. You know, like plants can scream at the farmer and say, spray over here, but not over there. They're doing a lot of measurements and things with drones where they can check on the field in different areas of it for water and whatnot. But now they're thinking that they can actually get the response back from the plants when there's some stressor is occurring. For instance, a bacterial stress, or maybe even, I don't know, overheating like we're likely to see here. No, I don't know that that's true, but I do think it will be. So, anyway. Lovely, 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 lovely. So much fun. Y'all are so funny. When we look at stuff that we've never seen before, we don't know what we're seeing. So I just got a text from somebody that is not anywhere near here and says, why are you pink?
Yeah.
And the answer is because I am the Northern Lights.
Yeah, you've been a virgin of pink, purple, and red.
All these colors all day today. It's marvelous. It's just so much fun. And we don't get a chance.
This was one of those unique opportunities.
I got to send back the text, right, surprisingly, that says, surprisingly, the Northern Lights are visible in Mississippi. Well, he's in Philadelphia, so he says, no. But, yes, it's true, it is. And not Philadelphia, Mississippi. It says Philadelphia, Nebraska, or somewhere like
Nebraska.
That. Somewhere like that. Somewhere up there. Anyway.
Yeah, thanks for being a part of the show.
We appreciate it. I have friends everywhere. I have friends all over the place. Some people just can't imagine that, frankly, that I'm still on the air. My grandmother used to listen. Thank y'all. And I heard it again this week. The answer is, yes, she did, and I'm still here, and you should listen, too. Because guess what? It's radio, so much fun. Radio, I don't know how many people really understand what a joy radio is. We talked about it on Marconi Week a couple of weeks ago. This didn't exist before a period of time. If you wanted to know something, where, you know, we talk about how come we celebrate Juneteenth, because it took 2 years for the knowledge, the information, the newspaper to get to Texas, okay? We don't have that problem anymore. We now celebrate instantaneous communication, and in some cases, instantaneous over-communication. We feel like we know so many things that we shouldn't know. If you're insulted by something, for example, I'm a person who kind of tends to have to think about it a minute. The story with me is that it takes me a couple of days to figure out exactly why I'm so angry when everybody else has already gotten mad and gotten over it, and I'm still ramping up because I'm not quite as angry as I'm going to get yet. Well, that's one piece of it, but I know that you're supposed to, for example, when you write an angry email to somebody, just like if you were writing it pen and ink, you're always advised to put it in the drawer until the next morning. Don't take it to the post office and mail it. You know, don't hit send on your computer while you're still angry. Wait till later you may just there may be something in there that you don't want to say at all, or there may just be an edit thing that you want to do, or it may just be that you want to read it again and then hit send because that's what you actually wanted to say. But it probably won't be the answer. Writing it down, or I would say typing it down too, really does help to reduce that anger. And it's the simple physical activity. It's the same thing as the physical activity of writing down the name of something, and it goes in your head in a different way than just reading it on a piece of paper does. This is the same strategy. The process is kind of like the Japanese tradition called hakidashiara. People write their negative thoughts on a plate and then destroy the plate. And it's symbolic. We do this in the South oftentimes at New Year's or New Year's Eve. When you make a bonfire to burn up the Christmas trees, you write write your wishes for the year. You write your regrets from the previous year. You write something that you're hopeful for. It just depends on who you are and what you're doing, but you write it down, and then it goes up in the flame because it's gone now. It's gone off to heaven to make a wish, or it's gone away from you, depending on how you look at those things. But I love this report from Scientific Reports. It's the culmination of years of work on the association between the written word and the assuaging of anger. It's brilliant, brilliant. Write it down first and then decide if you're really angry about it. Sandra's got pine straw 3 inches deep off the back porch. Could I plant zinnias in there without digging? Well, I don't know. Depends on three inches deep is depends on what's underneath it, actually. The zinnias may be able to take root in pine straw that's been wet, but they're going to need a place to grow, and they do need a soil for that. So I don't know if that's going to work. We'll see. We shall see. Brett says that he lived in Ashland, Nebraska in his young childhood, rolling hills, and one or two of the hottest summers of his life. That's true. When things get outrageous, they get really outrageous in other climates because we're a little bit more used to it. Just a little bit more used to it. Aw, Debbie, this is so sweet. My husband just brought me a dozen roses. Do you suggest putting a little sugar in the water in the vase? What a great question. Everybody's going to get flowers tomorrow, today and tomorrow, right, for the Mother's Day observations. I'm not in favor of sugar necessarily, but if that's what your family's always used, I'm not going to tell you not to. What you're trying to do is put something in there that will keep the stems open and not let them get clogged up with the naturally forming bacteria that happens in the vase. So the first thing to do is be sure you're not putting any leaves in the water, that you're only putting the stems in, and make a fresh cut in the base of each stem on an angle. And then fresh water every day will do it. A little sugar might do it. A little Sprite might do it. Martha Stewart has a great recipe. You can look up for a way to make a homemade flower preservative. Or when you buy the pack at the grocery store or the florist, they'll probably have the little packs of Floralife or one of those things that you can put in there. But, yes, some people even put an aspirin. The idea is that you're just trying to change the water enough so that the plants can continue to survive even though they've been cut. And change that water, oh gosh, at least every other day, if not every day, for the longest life in the vase, and make a fresh cut anytime the bottom of the stem feels compromised. If it feels sticky or if it feels a little bit smushy, make a fresh cut. Those are all of my good ideas. So, yeah, sugar, but a lot of other things too. Oh, my goodness, that was fun. Thank you for sending those pictures, Paula, because I didn't. I should have. That was a good time at Rivers with Mark. We had a wonderful time, and as usual, we thank people for letting us come and yak it up. We had a good time. It was a treat to be there. Really very, very much fun. I am going to be planting this afternoon. If you hear a loud noise, it's me getting to the end of the flat and being celebratory. I hope that will happen. I hope it'll happen for you too, whatever you're doing this weekend. Have yourself a good time. Have a very happy Mother's Day. And I just want to say, I appreciate my mom deciding that she would have me. So I imagine you do too. So tell her so. Y'all have a good one. See you next week. Thanks, Lance.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
Between the blue sky and green grass, there's a Mississippi cattleman making sure the food you need is on your local grocery store shelves. Whether it's a big juicy steak or hamburgers for your backyard cookout, our food starts right here. Because for these cattlemen, it's not just a job, it's caring for the animals that make up our nation's food supply. Just one of the many commodities a Mississippi farmer grows for you, the farm families of Mississippi.
Superior. It's more than a name. It's a promise that we make to our customers to provide you the highest quality U.S. farm-raised catfish at your favorite restaurant, your family reunion, or on your dinner table. Hey, this is Steve Azar, and I want to let you know that with Superior Catfish, you know the next bite is as good as the first, time after time, made possible by your friends and neighbors here in Mississippi. Remember, there's catfish, then there is Superior Catfish.
I'm Jeff Good.
A SuperTalk Mississippi Media Production.